Elizabeth Barrett is a wife, mother, grandmother, licensed marriage and family therapist, educator, eavesdropper, and emotion worker. And she uses all of these skills to address the subjects that we grapple with in this conversation with the reluctant therapist. Happy Tuesday, Elizabeth.
Happy Tuesday, Tyler.
How are you doing today?
I think I'm ready to do this.
You think you're ready to do it? It seems like you got a lot on your plate today, right? You're traveling after this, right?
I am. I have a little getaway, just an overnight. But I just have a lot of moving parts and thoughts. I have a lot of thoughts in my head today, which it could be a good thing, could be a dangerous thing.
Yeah, it could go either way, right?
Exactly. If I get too focused on the thoughts in my head, then you can just pull me back in.
Okay, well, where are we generally off today? What's thought number one?
Okay, thought number one is originally the show was going to be centered around the idea of parental alienation syndrome and shared parenting dysfunction. They're unfortunately more common than you would think, and they have a devastating impact on the lives of children who get caught up in two parents who are so embattled and their hatred for each other that they end up dragging their children into these really toxic and traumatic situations. That was the original show topic. But then, as timing would have it, with the whole cheating scandal coming up and the college admissions bribery and, you know, the stars that were arrested and just the whole kind of questioning of entitlement and privilege and college educations, I thought, well, maybe we need to tie in, broaden that idea of our conversation of parenting and talk about, you know, what is the role of parents and are we doing a disservice to our children when we basically open doors that would not usually be opened for them? And is it really in the best interest of not only the children, but in our community at large, if we have a culture that supports this idea that everything is okay as long as you don't get caught, or, right, the end justifies the means, and, you know, this whole modeling we have in our society of cheating and bribing and stealing and lying that is not just an occasional experience, but something that is at the foundation of our culture. We see it in how our government behaves. We see it how our local governments behave and elected officials. We see, you know, a lot of parents who are modeling cheating and lying and bribing and stealing. And then we wonder why our children grow up cheating and lying and stealing and struggling. It's a pattern that gets passed on. We model those behaviors. And then I was thinking about this shooting that happened in New Zealand this week and the intensity of the hate that the shooter expressed in this violent act. And people started talking about, you know, the idea of evil and where does this come from? And are people born this way? And is it something that could have been prevented, someone being raised with such a level of hate? And we're not going to discuss or debate evil today. I mean, someone might want to, but I think it's more important to talk about how we raise hate, how we as a culture and as parents raise children who learn to hate as well as learn to fear and learn to love, and that we are where those behaviors begin. And so I'm trying to think about how to navigate these conversations without it becoming a mother bashing show, because that tends to be something that we do as a society. When, you know, kids start to get into trouble, we instantly start pointing at mothers as the problem. It's another name for this parental alienation syndrome is often called malicious mother syndrome. So we have this default of saying that mothers are the problem, but I don't want to get bogged down in that. I really want to pull back a little further and talk about parenting in general. What is our parenting model as a culture? What are the values that we are passing on to our children as a culture? You know, have you thought about what your parenting goals are, and what are the parenting goals that we support? You know, what are the parenting goals that our society supports, that our physicians support, that our mental health professionals support, that schools support? You know, people parent reactively. They parent often the way they were parented, if they felt their own parents did a good job, or they reject the parenting they received and try to create their own alternative way of parenting. Each generation has had a different take on what are the values that are necessary for their children to succeed. And we continuously keep reinventing the wheel of parenting individually, but culturally, we have no model at all. We basically throw parents out there and say, do the best you can. And I'm wondering if one of the ways to address all four of these issues, the parental alienation syndrome, cheating scandals and bribery and stealing and hate, one of the ways to address these things is to create a more universal parenting plan, to have some sort of universal understanding of what children need to thrive and what we need children to learn so that we can change the direction of our future as a society. And we need to talk about a more holistic public education system that includes a new definition of success, because we have gotten caught up in this desperate idea that children need to be happy. And in order for them to be happy, they need to find a job that brings them the highest income so they'll be secured in a place of success and comfort. But research doesn't support that success and financial wealth equate to good mental health. As a matter of fact, recent research that just came out of Northwestern University counter that entire idea and actually have offered up an entirely new way of looking at what our goals of parenting should be. And so I'm going to open it up today to hear your thoughts on these topics. I'm going to give you a little description of parental alienation syndrome and talk about what that looks like and how it has become commonplace in a lot of marriages, parents going through divorces, but also people who are married. We're going to talk a little bit about the cheating scandal and how children learn about cheating and lying, and then talk about this idea of a universal parenting plan, because there is a style of parenting that actually across the board, across socioeconomic status, across education levels, across cultural boundaries, there's one style of parenting where children actually have the highest rate of success, and success based on this idea of mental health and well-being, of that sense of thrive. And so if we know that there is a style of parenting that provides our children the greatest opportunity to do well, then why are we not teaching that type of parenting? Why aren't we all buying into that style of parenting? Why aren't we creating a universal parenting plan? Because the bottom line is this: our future as a society, as a country, as a world, depends on us parenting the next two generations of children very differently, in a more focused and productive way to help change the course of the world. Because what we're doing now is rearing children that are very fragile. We're rearing young adults who don't feel up to the challenge and challenges that they are being faced with. And the good news is, it just takes two generations. It takes two generations of parents creating a sense of focus and resolve on what it is they want their children to learn and to master by the time they enter adulthood. It just takes two generations of parents with that kind of understanding of where we need to get to and what kind of humans we need to raise. Because that's what we're doing as parents. We're raising adults. We're raising human beings. We're not trying to create Disneyland for our children so that they never feel any sadness, although that's kind of the story we're living right now, and that's kind of where we've found ourselves, trying to make everything pretty for our children. That's really not our job. Our job is to raise young children into thriving adults who have the capacity to stand in the face of trauma or challenges and be resilient and have problem-solving skills and be able to adapt and think clearly. And we're failing at that. And so we've got two generations of parenting to do, but we first need to get together and figure out what that parenting plan looks like. I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and this is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist, and we'll be opening up the phone line soon, 805-781-3875. You can also be part of the conversation by finding me on our Facebook page, The Reluctant Therapist, following us on Instagram, Elizabeth_TRT. You can also send me an email to elizabeth@thereluctanttherapist.com. What does that universal parenting plan look like? We can't do it alone. We have to do it together. You're listening to Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX. We'll be back to take your calls. You're listening to A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and today we are going to talk about parenting and how do we create a universal parenting plan that we can all be comfortable with and buy into and ensure that future generations going forward are raised with the capacity and the resilience to be able to thrive and adapt to whatever comes their way. And it's not going to be an easy shift. And it's not going to be easy for the children that are being raised underneath this universal parenting plan, because not all children will be able to thrive the same way under a more stringent way of raising kids. And that's part of the reason we need to do it, because at this point, we have so many different specialized parenting styles to try to meet the needs and demands of every special, unique child that we've completely diluted the whole goal of raising children, that we're trying to get the world to adapt and change to the special needs of all of our children, instead of what we should be doing is finding a way to adapt our children to the demands of the world. Our job is to help our children find their place and find their gifts and their talents and understand their limitations and their challenges and to find how they can make a space for themselves. But what's created part of the struggle that we have right now is that we're trying so hard to make everything fair and everything available and everything across the board, even for all children and all parents all the time, that we have weakened the entire social fabric that supports our culture, that we have so many people who are expecting to be tended to, we don't have a lot of people tending to the things that we need to address. All right, so I want to start off giving you just a little description of the parental alienation syndrome and shared function parenting dysfunction, because this is just a little piece of the puzzle of how we've gotten off track in understanding what our children need so that they can thrive as adults. It says a lot about how self-absorbed we've learned to become and so concerned about our own best interests and our own needs and our own desires. And it stems from this kind of 80s mentality about it's the me generation. It's all about feeling good. But it's been around always in some iteration, but really took hold this idea that I am the center of the universe. And if I am happy, that's all that matters. And everyone else around me be damned. That I am going to make sure that my needs are met. And so you can see where this parental alienation syndrome kind of arose. So the classic definition of parental alienation syndrome is when usually the custodial parent in a divorce, but it can actually happen within a marriage. But we'll just say the parent who has the primary child-rearing duties in a family systematically drives a wedge between the non-custodial parent and the child. And they do this by creating an environment where the child does not feel safe. The custodial parent will tell their child that their other parent is dangerous, doesn't have their best interest in well-being in their mind. They start creating ways that the child and the other parent can't see each other. They start to keep secrets. They start to tell the child not to tell their other parent what they're doing on the weekends or how they're spending their time, or don't introduce them to their friends. We'll see parents, custodial parents, cancel visits or appointments, or actually move out of the state without letting the other parent know. I mean, there's really no limits to what the custodial parent who intends on alienating the other parent will do to make sure that they end or destroy or tear the fabric of that parental relationship. And the person who is the custodial parent who's creating this alienation generally starts from this place of feeling righteous, that they somehow feel like they have been burned by the other parent, or that they somehow didn't get recognized for all the hard work they've done, or they believe that they've been hurt by the other parent. And instead of dealing with this as adults, parent to parent, they tend to then use the child as a weapon. They weaponize the child to hurt the other parent. And they might even in some level feel like that other parent is dangerous or unsafe. But again, instead of utilizing the resources to deal with this as adults, they end up using the child between the two of them. And that's a very basic description of parental alienation syndrome. And as I said, it's also been referred to as malicious mother syndrome at different times. And there are some people that believe that the custodial parent is actually the evil one, and who is mean and is angry and victimizes the child. There are others that believe that this alienating parent is trying to protect their child and really believes they're doing things well. But aside from either one of those perspectives, the children are traumatized. Adult children who grew up in homes of alienation end up having higher levels of anxiety and depression. They have higher rates of suicidal ideation. They have higher rates of OCD. They are less likely to be in a successful marriage themselves if they ever get married at all. They tend to have a harder time holding down jobs. They carry a lot of resentment. They have a harder time launching from the home. Children who grew up in a home with that kind of divisiveness struggle for the rest of their lives. And even on a smaller scale, we have shared parenting dysfunction, and that might not go to the extent of the alienation where children are kept away from their custodial parent or driven away from them. But even on a lesser scale, in shared parenting dysfunction, the parents are so busy being angry at each other. And this is either after they get divorced, but it can also happen in a contentious marriage where the parents are so angry at each other all the time that they don't even recognize how their abusive behavior towards each other is hurting their children, causing them to feel like they have to choose sides, causing them to feel like they have to always be perfect. You know, one of the red flags of a child who might be in a home where the parents are hostile towards each other is when a child is too well-behaved. Because a child that feels like they have to be perfect and well-behaved all the time is a child that feels like they need to be perfect so their parents will no longer fight. But then you might also see a child who tries to be perfect at home, but then gets into their own confrontations at school because they haven't learned how to navigate relationships, because the model that they see is just two parents who are after each other all the time. And so that's one piece of our parenting puzzle to the extreme. But then let's swing to the other side and talk about the cheating and bribery scandal. And this speaks to this other indulgent style of parenting, sometimes known as helicopter parenting. It's also known as permissive parenting or indulgent parenting. This we see quite often in very wealthy families who have a lot of access to resources. And in these homes, you know, they're raising children who never really have to worry for anything or do much of anything. These are parents that tend to rush in to their defense if they feel like they're being treated unfairly by teachers or coaches. They tend to let children stay home from school if they're uncomfortable or having a hard time. These are parents that just want their children to be happy, and they're willing to pay whatever that cost is for their children to achieve whatever level of happiness there is. So this indulgent parenting is the idea that parenting in some ways is a competition, and that you're in a competition with all the other parents who are very wealthy or well-to-do or in your same school system or in your same neighborhood. It becomes a keep up with the Joneses mentality about parenting. But unfortunately, the outcome isn't great for these children as well. Although they look good on paper, they tend to be high achievers, they get into elite universities, they tend to be very social and do well in sports, but they also have a higher rate of anxiety and depression and suicidal ideation than students who come from more modest or working class homes. They tend to have a higher rate of dissatisfaction. They tend to struggle more keeping a job, and they have a more difficult time sustaining long-term relationships because they're used to being the center of the universe and have a hard time learning compromise and negotiation and self-sacrifice that becomes a part of a healthy relationship. So on two sides of the spectrum, you have indulgent parents who are kind of buying their child's childhood. You have the shared parental dysfunction that can happen at any socioeconomic level and parental alienation syndrome. And then you have the parents who are just struggling, who didn't have access to good parenting resources themselves or good models. They might have grown up in an area that was high in crime, or they were traumatized themselves, or they didn't have access to education and to being exposed to different people and diversity and opportunities. And when you grow up in a neighborhood or an area or in a home where people feel afraid, and they feel like they don't have opportunities and they feel hopeless, they tend to raise their children feeling afraid and hopeless, which develops into hate. Hate for those we don't know, hate for things we don't understand, hate for things we haven't experienced. And that hate can fester and foster and bubble up. And with no place to go, you end up with people who get into fights, have a hard time holding jobs, have higher rates of suicidal ideation, have higher rates of drug abuse, may suffer from anxiety and depression, but that tends to be more of a higher socioeconomic situational issue, that for someone who is struggling with fear and lack of opportunities and resources, it tends to be expressed much more in outward anger, fighting, getting into trouble, getting arrested, getting on the wrong side of the law. And so those three different styles of parenting are really prominent in our society today. And then we have the authoritarian parents, and that's the old school parents. Children are to be seen and not heard. These parents value obedience. They demand control over the children. Authoritarian homes don't have a lot of leeway for expressiveness. And so you see a lot of indulgent parenting of the last couple of generations as a reflection or reaction to what was very much an authoritarian style of parenting that kind of dominated our culture up until the late 50s, early 60s. So when things started to shift away from the authoritarian parents, children are to be seen and not heard, and into a more indulgent style of parenting, this is where we start to see the wheels come off the cart for families and kids and parents in general. And so how do we find a universal parenting plan? What does that look like? Well, it looks like authoritative parenting. Authoritative parents, they're the ones that have high demands and expectation for their children, but they also have a higher level of responsiveness than authoritarian parents do. And so authoritative parents set limits. They have influence over their kids' choices and help shape their values and use reasoning with their children to help them understand what their opportunities are. It's a very intensive, hands-on type of parenting. It could be seen as helicopter parenting, but it's not the helicopter parenting where you're going in and saving your child and making things easier for them. But this intensive kind of parenting is more about loving your children without coddling them, showing them support, but not flying in and saving the day all the time, and creating and having some sort of well-intentioned goal for your child at the end of their years being home with you as a parent. And so in order for authoritative parenting, for healthy helicopter parenting to work, we have to have a really specific parenting goal. What is it that we need our children to accomplish so that they can thrive? And right now, our narrow definition of success is that we conveyor belt these children from the cradle to college to their cubicle, that it's all about academic success. Those who get the highest grades get into the best college, get the best jobs. But that doesn't necessarily mean that they have the highest level of mental health and well-being. This research that we're looking at that's coming out of Northwestern actually shows that young girls, specifically who grow up in the wealthiest of neighborhoods with the highest access to the best schools and most elite colleges, have 2 to 3 times more, or 2 to 3 times more likely to have symptoms of anxiety and depression. And young men who grow up in wealthy neighborhoods tend to have 2 to 3 times more likely to get into trouble because there's very little that's holding them accountable. We've created this very narrow runway for success. Today, if your child gets a B+ in a class, that torpedoes their pathway to elite colleges, which creates parents' panic and anxiety, which breeds this movement towards cheating, these cheating scandals, cheating on SATs, giving bribes, trying to buy their kids' way into schools. We've created this one definition of success that depends on children achieving levels of success that are near impossible, that maybe 1% of our kids actually have the temperament to do. But for the rest of them, it creates this sense of nervous tension that shows in all sorts of unhealthy behaviors, not just addictions to drugs and alcohol and hookup sex and blackout drinking by the time they get to college, but also to these addictions to social media and any sort of numbing behavior, you know, watching Netflix all day long or playing video games 24 hours a day. These numbing coping mechanisms are all of our children trying to say there's got to be more to life than this one narrow path to success. So if you're just tuning in, that was a long description of the way we've gotten into this place of parenting that has created a box that is keeping our children from being able to be prepared for where the world is going. So I'd like to open up the phone lines, 805-781-3875. What do you think about this? Are you concerned about parental alienation syndrome? Are you concerned about how we can parent in a way that's effective for our children? Have you found authoritative parenting or a style of parenting that is creating higher expectations for your children, but a broader definition of what success will look like for them? 805-781-3875. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. This is a conversation with a reluctant therapist. And as we move into the next week, I just want to remind you that the KCBX Spring Pledge Drive is almost here, and you could win a pair of tickets to the Live Oak Music Festival and a 2-night stay at the all-new Kinney SLO Hotel. For your chance to win, you can make a pledge to KCBX by March 28th. Visit kcbx.org for all the details as we move into Spring Pledge Drive. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. Thank you for supporting Central Coast Public Radio. We'll be back to take your calls.
Well, I started out down a dirty road, started out all alone, and the sun went down as I crossed the hill, and the town lit up, the world got still. I'm learning to fly, but I ain't got wings. Coming down is the hardest thing. Well, the good old days.
I'm Elizabeth Barrett. This is a conversation with a reluctant therapist. Our number is 805-781-3875. You know, I think about children that are young adults that I've met that have been raised well, and I always ask them, what was it like at home? What were your parents like? And I have to tell you that some of the most astounding young people I've met in the last 10 years working at the university have been my first gen students who grew up in homes where their parents, you know, work two and three jobs and they themselves get up in the morning and work and then they come to school and they are focused on reaching their goals, not just for themselves, but the goals of their family, that these young people are at college thriving and learning and struggling to work and learn this information because their entire family is counting on them to help lift them up. And that's what we're looking at when we talk about a universal parenting plan, is having some sort of goal that the family creates, that the family follows, that helps to propel their children into their own adulthood to make a difference, not just for their own family, but for the greater good of our culture. And it starts with having an idea of what is our job as a parent? What is it that we can expect for our children? Because right now we're just trying to follow our kids and make them happy all the time and find ways to keep them entertained and find ways to take them on vacation and make sure that they're never sad. You know, that is the antithesis of what we really need to be doing, which is helping them deal with struggles and overcome adversity and to bounce back up when they fail so that they can build resilience. Because life is much more about dealing with the struggle than it is about just being happy all the time. That we have to focus on skills that'll actually enliven their lives. And it's important to have the academic skills, absolutely, but children are all not going to be academically the same. And if we dumb down our academics or we dumb down our schools or we try to make accommodations for every person to get the exact same thing, then we hurt people at the top end and we hurt kids at the low end because we're just kind of squishing it all together into one kind of vanilla style of education. And instead, we need to be expanding what our definition of success looks like. We have to be helping children find their skill set, whatever that is. And that might mean that they're not going to make $100,000, $150,000, $200,000 working at Google. That may not be their path. But what really matters ultimately is a strong sense of mental health and well-being. Because a strong sense of mental wellness is a much bigger indicator of success in a lifetime of thriving than financial success. You know, you have a lot of kids right now who are working jobs that they're putting in 10, 12, 15 hours a day into, and they are taking medications just to get out of bed in the morning, and they are numbing themselves at night, and they're wondering why they're doing all this, and they're having a hard time making relationships of their own. You know, we've talked about kind of the regression of intimacy in this generation that's coming up because they're so busy being taught to excel academically that they haven't learned the things that really matter. If you really want to push your child, and we should be pushing our children really hard every day, we should be pushing them hard every day to meet whatever challenges that are in front of them because life only gets more challenging. And so they need to have the ability to cope with that, but also push them to develop meaningful relationships, to cultivate interests that are actually of value and going to support their mental health and well-being, and teach them the discipline they need to overcome challenging situations. Those are the focuses of the authoritative parents that are going to help change the course of our next generation. 805-781-3875 is the number to be part of our conversation. We'll go to the phones. Patricia, you're on the air. What's on your mind?
Oh, well, thank you. I'm a professional that has dealt with a lot of children and families, and as such, and in my own family, let me just give you some markers. I was raised in the Midwest, born in the 40s, so I'm accustomed to the more authoritarian approach to mothering and fathering, which I'm not a fan of particularly. I would like to address a point to working mothers and fathers. And I think that if parents have a limited time to spend with their kids, it is more important to have quality. You need to be present with your child. You need to listen to them. You need to look at them and love them. And it doesn't take a lot of time. You can have a date night with your child. The other overarching importance, I think, there is that you have to be clear that you're not befriending your children. You have to be a leader. You have to be a leader, set boundaries, limitations, and expectations. And those consequences. Now, I'm finding that in this, these more recent generations, parents are having trouble with that.
Well, I think they're really concerned, yes, about not being liked by their children. And it's interesting because you talked about the authoritarian, you know, parenting you grew up with. The reason we see indulgent parenting is because a lot of people rejected that authoritarian, children are to be seen and not heard, silent parenting. But then we went the full, you know, opposite end of the spectrum, and it was all about just meeting the needs of kids and always wanting them to be happy. And that would also mean I want my kids to like me because I didn't like my parents growing up. Therefore, I'm going to parent differently.
But not everybody went to that extent.
No. No, I mean, not everyone went to the indulgent end, but enough that we have a real issue.
Would you say that it stems from that?
From the authoritarian?
Yeah, befriending.
Yeah, well, I think the befriending style of parenting is a result of a lot of people that were raised not liking their parents, hating their parents for being so strict on them. And so they decided, I want to be my child's best friend because I didn't like my parents. And so they kind of threw the baby out with the bathwater, you know, kind of the discipline part and the goal setting and resilience. They kind of threw all that out just in an effort to make sure their kids were happy and...
You know, which is a crime, because if the parent is not a leader, if the parent does not help the child navigate through the complexities of life, oh my goodness, you know, that's a problem.
It is. Patricia, thank you for calling in and offering your guidance as well. And thank you for helping families, because that's part of what we need moving forward, is we need mentors to help parents navigate this complex world. Because the societal message is all about indulgence. The societal message is buy for those kids. Be popular. Make sure your kids are happy. Make sure they like you. That's the cultural story. So if you're the parent that's saying, no, I'm rejecting all of that, we're going to clamp down and really focus on those few things that matter, which are relationships, cultivating interests and skills, and developing discipline, which sounds a little authoritarian, but it's not if you make sure you are taking into account your child's mental health and well-being, and not, you know, ignoring their needs for connection and love. You know, the authoritarian style was all kind of about this cold Dickinsonian style of, you know, just do what I say and things will be fine. But the foundation of raising children to be adults was very important. But we threw that all out and kind of lost our way. So we lost Victor real quick. Victor, go ahead and call back in, 805-781-3875, looking for some actual ideas of what are the things we can do. Because what's hard about, you know, raising children when you're doing something that's not in the mainstream is that you're not only going to get pushback from your kids, because they'll say, why are you the only parent that doesn't let me, you know, do what I want to do? Why are you the only parent that doesn't let me have my phone, you know, at night? Why are you the only parent that won't let me, you know, stay over with friends? It's hard to be, why are you the only parent? So one of the first things that we need in this universal parenting plan is parents to kind of come together and be a support for each other. Find like-minded parents who you can talk about these strategies and the things that are important to you, and that you can back each other up. And parents similarly have their kids do play dates and spend time together. So then the kids are used to kind of having the boundaries and the expectations. And when I talk about, you know, the importance of raising our children with a sense of discipline to be able to meet the demands that they're going to be facing, I'm not talking about the, you know, the old strap kind of discipline. I'm talking about discipline which comes from the word disciple, which means to teach and to guide. You know, our children need guidance. They need to learn how to be adults in a society and what the expectations of that society is. All right, Victor, I'm glad that you're back. What's on your mind today?
Hi, Elizabeth.
Hi.
I'm calling because I'm a parent. I've got some two young men, 22 and 23. And, you know, they've experienced, as have probably both their mother and I, many different aspects of all those different styles of parenting that you talked about, you know, including authoritative and, but, you know, different aspects of everything in between. Anyway, definitely, you know, when they were younger, I was more authoritarian in style, because that's kind of what was, you know, modeled to me. Their mother was kind of no more of a hover, a helicopter parent. Anyway, you know, they're having a little kind of failure to launch, failure to thrive. And anyway, I'm just curious if there's anything I can do now that can help them out, or if there's any resources or things like that.
So thank you, Victor, because this is a story I'm hearing from a lot of parents. Because in our best intentions of wanting our children to feel good about themselves in the world, we've clipped their wings a little bit, right? So are they? Did they go to college, or are they still doing junior college, or no college, or work? Where are they?
Yeah, you know, they attempt to go to college. I'm not sure. You know, they've. Between the two of them, they probably finished a handful of semesters. And, you know, one's really not doing it right now, and he's kind of come to the conclusion, you know, that college isn't for everyone. And I tell him the same thing. College is not for everybody, but you got to, you know, figure out a trade or do something and learn something.
Right. You need to have some plan. I agree. And that's where we've kind of fallen down short, is that we got boxed into this one plan of college. We don't have, you know, tech schools and trade schools. But here's where I'd like you to start if you're interested, Victor. Get your sons on serviceyear.org. serviceyr.org, that website. They have 60,000 different service year opportunities under all sorts of umbrella organizations like AmeriCorps, Teach for America, Outdoor Work. Help them find something they can do for a year. A service year is a year of paid work for a nonprofit. So it's not volunteering. They're making not a huge stipend, but a small stipend. But they're working for this nonprofit. They're learning skills. They're giving back to their community. At the end of the year of service, they get a $5,000 to $8,000 stipend to go towards education or training in some sort of program. You can do up to two or three different service years and earn that stipend. You can do a service year anywhere in the United States, so you could send them to places in the country that they would have never seen before. And at the end of their service, they can do 1 year, they can do 2 years. They are considered veterans of service, domestic service, and that goes on their application. And that, to me, is a phenomenal way to help young people launch where college isn't quite working for them and the military is too extreme, but they have this opportunity.
That's a good idea. Okay. Yeah. Thank you so much.
And there's 60,000 different opportunities they can apply for. I've had students who've worked in Juneau, Alaska. I've had students in Eastern Washington. I have kids right now that are out doing trail building in different parts of Hawaii. I have students who've lived in Maine, off the coast of Maine, doing environmental education. I have a couple students who went and helped with immigration, relocation for immigrants that were coming to this country. There is some sort of service organization for every interest. It's up to them to make it happen, and it will grow them. I guarantee you it will grow them.
Right on. Very good.
Thank you for calling in, Victor. I hope this works. Let me know how it goes for the boys, the young men.
Okay, take care. I love what you do. Thanks.
Thank you. This is a conversation with a reluctant therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. Our number is 805-781-3875. Here are some pieces to our universal parenting plan. And again, I'm not rejecting helicopter parenting. As a matter of fact, some of this research that came out of Northwestern and Yale about where we are right now in our parenting lives, says that there is actually a right way to helicopter parent, that, you know, being a parent that's involved and pushing their children in a healthy way really helps set their children up to do well. It's just, how do we helicopter parent in a way that's not pushing our kids just to get good grades, just to ride that conveyor belt to success? It's incredibly stress-inducing for children, as I said before. How did we get to a place that getting a B+, you know, torpedoes a child's future? That's not correct. And there are tons of schools that are a fabulous fit for all sorts of students and all sorts of ways of learning. So we have to rethink what we believe college is supposed to be. You know, we have to look at our own obsession as adults with material goods and this hope that we carry that somehow the more convenient our life is, the easier and better our life will be. That hasn't paid off. You know, we have adults that are constantly trying to achieve these higher levels of status at the cost of their own health, their mental health, their well-being, and also to the cost of their children. You know, it's interesting because Patricia mentioned quality time, and quality time was actually a term that was coined in the 1980s post-second wave of feminism to help working moms feel better about the amount of time they were away from home. And the thought was that if you didn't have all day with your kids, if you just had good quality time, 20 minutes a day, and were really present, that your kids would be fine. But that research was debunked very quickly after that original study came out. The kids actually need twice as much of our time and half as much of our money. And that's part of the universal parenting plan, that we as parents have to be willing to change the way we're doing things so that we can be there to provide discipline, that we can be there to have expectations, that we can be there to help our children discover and cultivate interests outside of video games, you know, outside of these very one-dimensional ways of experiencing life. I was listening to someone talk yesterday about I think one of the candidates running for president saying we need to have an education that represents and reflects the jobs that are needed for young people. That's incredibly single-minded because those jobs won't be here forever. Every industry changes. And so if you raise a child to have one skill set, they're only good at coding or they're only good at, you know, math, or they're only good at theater, that narrow perspective is not going to open up enough opportunities. We need to be raising children that are educated and experienced in cultivating a wide range of interests. And they have to have the discipline, the expectation. Those hours of practicing piano or kicking the soccer ball or practicing math problems, you know, done well with expectations, can be an incredible foundation. You know, kids learning how to work hard and struggle and achieve do okay as adults. They have better rate of mental health. They have lower rates of depression, anxiety. They'll say, my parents really pushed me. My parents were really hard on me. My parents had high expectations, but they also have skills. As I mentioned before, when I think about parents whose children I see out thriving in the world, they're the parents who their kids were doing chores, not to get an allowance, but doing chores because it's part of the family expectation, that everything that these kids wanted to buy, they had to earn, that their parents might pitch in, but the kids had to earn that. These old-fashioned values that we know are right, I'm not telling you anything new, but we've kind of thrown away because the cultural message, the media message is, you know, we should be happy, we should be pleasured, we should always be feeling good. And because the world is scary and because things seem to be unraveling underneath us, instead of becoming more adaptable and stronger, we're becoming weaker and more fragile. And our children are weaker and more fragile. And I see it in my students. They have less capacity to cope. So that universal parenting plan looks like this. We stop helping with homework because homework, although it's way too much of it that is assigned right now, but homework helps kids to learn time management and planning and execution. And they'll either get it done or not get it done and face those consequences. Because the consequences of not finishing homework in second grade are very small compared to the consequences of not being able to get up and find a job or to follow up with a conversation that's tough to have with a friend. You know, these skills they're learning in second, third, fourth, fifth grade about time management, execution, dealing with teachers, learning how teachers all have different personalities and how to adapt to them. You know, those are skills that will help them to be successful adults. We're going to stop interfering with teachers and coaches and anyone that we feel like is impinging on our children's well-being, because that's how our kids learn self-efficacy and they learn resilience, to have to learn to deal with their own issues. Now, as helicopter parents, doing it the right way, can you help them learn the communication skills to talk to a teacher? Can you help them to learn how to navigate and strategize, how to work with relationships or to make friends? Absolutely. That's our job. We're supposed to be modeling what a healthy, meaningful relationship looks like so that our kids can see it done well. We're going to stop taking over our children's projects and writing their speeches and putting together their presentation, because basically you're telling your child that they can't do it. And so conversely, as they grow, they won't be able to do it. They won't succeed. And then the idea of teaching children what the values are in their life. They need to be pushed towards the things that are important: healthy, meaningful relationships, being disciplined, learning how to speak up for themselves, not giving in to things that are uncomfortable. And I know I've said this before, but it's important to reiterate that the most common form of anxiety today, aside from generalized anxiety disorder, most highly diagnosed, is social anxiety. And social anxiety is absolutely a result of overparenting, of protecting children from those uncomfortable early relationships, of having to get out from behind, you know, our legs and go out and experience the world. And so everything we do as a parent has to be conscious from the time they're young. Sit down with your partner. What is our plan? What are the skills that our children are going to need to learn before they leave home? What are the lessons we want them to have experienced? What natural consequences? What are the things that we want them to be curious about? And then create a timeline. How are we going to fit all of these lessons and skills in, along with making sure that they're proficient academically to their level of ability? And to push them a little harder than you think you want to. Because as parents, we lead with our heart, and leading with our heart doesn't always help our kids succeed. Sometimes we have to step back and say, what does this young person need so that when I'm not here, when I'm no longer here to pave the way, they'll have the capacity to step out of their comfort zone and take on some other challenges. And believe me, I have daily feelings where I wish that I could pull my children in and say, just be at home where you're safe so I can breathe and sleep well. But that's not what we signed up for. As much as my instinct is to want to save them and keep track of them and make things easier for them, it's never worked out well. I can honestly say that the times that I overstepped, that I flew my helicopter too low, it generally ended up hurting my daughters and not helping them, that it ended up getting in their way and frustrating them and hurting our relationship. And I want to finish up with this idea of the parental alienation or shared parenting dysfunction, that your children are not your weapon. Your children are not your possession. Your children are human beings that you brought into the world, and you made a covenant with the universe to help them achieve adulthood with all of the skills necessary to succeed and thrive in all areas, not just as consumers, not just as little capitalists, not just as an income, but also to be able to thrive in the ways that humans are meant to thrive, in healthy relationships, with deep connections, being of service to others. Being of service to others is a great remedy for anxiety and depression and sadness and sense of overwhelm. And so if we're going to change the future, if we're going to change the direction of this country and the world, if we're going to reduce hate and address cheating, we have to model that as parents. You know, children naturally in preschool are cheaters. They cheat at games. They tell lies. They're figuring life out. And when they have some awareness that they can manipulate the system, then they start to cheat and lie a little bit. And so that's where our modeling comes in. We teach them, no, you know what? That seems like an easy out, but here's the way we're going to do it. And this has been a conversation with a reluctant therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. You can reach me by email, elizabeth@thereluctanttherapist.com. You can join us on our Facebook page. You can podcast our show. You can participate by following us on Instagram. Any way you join us, I'll look forward to hearing from you. And thank you for supporting Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX. We'll be back next week.
Don't give up, I know you can see all the world and the mess that we're making. Can't give up and hope God will intercede. Come on back, imagine that we could get it together and stand up for where we need to be. 'Cause crying won't save or feed a hungry child. Can't lay down and wait for a miracle to change things. So lift up your eyes, lift up your heart, singing, mercy, will we overcome this? Oh, one by one, could we turn it around? Maybe carry on just a little bit longer. And I try to give you what you need. Me and you and you and you, I just wanna be free, yeah, yeah. But you see, all the world is just as we've made it. And until we got a new world, I got to say that love is not a whisper or a weakness. No, love is strong. We got to get together, yeah. Gotta get. So there is no reason to fight. Mercy, will we overcome this? Yeah, one by one, could we turn it around? Baby, carry on just a little bit longer. And I'll try to give what you need. Yeah. Ah. Oh, mercy, will we overcome this? Oh, have we come too far to turn it around? Turn it around.